Hi, this is Steve, aka at AllUnthar on Twitter, and here are some more of my gaming vexes. Werewolves are the poor cousins of the hidden world, so do the factions imagine. Overlooked as an annoyance and too fragmented to be taken seriously, the other factions have pushed the wolves to the fringes of liminal society. They are monitored like an unexploded bomb or a live volcano, an unpredictable, explosive natural hazard. The werewolves themselves are more complicated. They are supernaturally strong and fast, vicious, powerful, and incredibly hard to kill. They burn brightly, love hard, and hold each other tight against the night. After a century of persecution, they pretty much think of the night as the Order of St. Bede. Any bloodsucker who isn't paying them, the Queen's Court and all mages. Not much left after that. But the wheel is turning. Someone is reminding the wolves of the power they hold. They're getting organised. And they are coming. Way back in episode 4, a group of us looked back at a series of the Liminal RPG we played. It was, and still is, one of the most popular episodes we've done to date. It was a comment by Kay Elling that gave the episode its title. Kay described Liminal as ethereal beauty with hoodies, which I think brilliantly captures the spirit of the game, or how we played it at least. I'm not going to go back over old ground and describe the game. If you're not already familiar with Liminal, I recommend you go back and give episode 4 a listen, as I think it's one of our better ones. Liminal as a game goes from strength to strength and remains a firm favourite for many of us. There's already one fantastic supplement out for the game. Pax Londinium delves deep into the hidden world of London and is packed with game potential. But Liminal fans rejoice. On this episode, we're going to cover the latest supplement for Liminal, the rather fantastic Werewolves of Britain. Alongside the supplement's author, Becky Anison, I've also managed to con the game's designer, Paul Michener, into coming to talk to us again. To provide some much needed common sense, I'm joined by Jonathan at Jonak943 on Twitter, and a voice you Traveller fans may recognise, Dave Patterson of the thoroughly balanced and well considered Frankenstein's RPG podcast. At the time of recording, the link to pre-order Werewolves of Britain has just gone live. I'll put the link in the show notes. For those of you listening to this at some unspecified future time, I'll just assume you've already bought the supplement and leave it at that. For now, just sit back, relax, and enjoy.
As you say, Paul, you've been on a podcast before because you came and very kindly ran an actual play for us of Out of the Ashes.
It's lovely to be back.
It's great to have you back. And Dave's been on the podcast before. Obviously, yes, a stalwart indeed, yeah. of all Anthrex's Game of Vexes. But we've got two new people joining us this evening. So, Becky, do you want to tell us about you? What was the last game you played?
Oh, brilliant. Yes, I'll definitely tell you about me. I'm Becky Anison. I've written for Liminal. Thank you very much for that writing gig, Paul.
I needed a werewolf expert. Who else could I contact for that?
No, that you make a good point. I'm also one half of Black Armada Games with my partner Josh, and we have written games like Lovecraft-esque and Bite Marks and things like that, which has been pretty fun. And the last game that I played was a playtest. Is that allowed? Am I allowed to do a playtest?
Of course. Yeah.
Josh is developing a game called Biome at the moment, which is like, have you played Microscope?
No, I'm aware of a Microscope.
So Microscope is a sort of a world-building game where you kind of collaboratively create a world at the table using lots of index cards. Josh is doing Biome, which is a hack of Microscope, but where you create an ecology.
And is that a tabletop RPG?
Yeah.
Or a, oh, that sounds ace. Think you'll come and do an actual play for us? Is he going to kickstart?
Oh, I'll ask him.
we specialise in boosting Kickstarters, at least a very small amount on this podcast.
Oh, no, yours really helped mine, in all seriousness. The podcast, there was someone who wrote to me, said, I was on the fence until I heard the actual play.
There you go.
One wholesale.
There you go. My work is done. Thank you, Becky. That's great. And Jonathan, do you want to tell us a little bit about you and about your sort of background with Liminal?
Yeah, my name's Jonathan Cockerham. Recently, 2019, got back into gaming after 25 years, probably not playing. I keep asking myself why it's taking me so long to do that, which is a common kind of story. I've spoke to a lot of people like that. I absolutely love the Liminal game. I've always liked kind of an interesting urban fantasy. You probably first got into it reading, is it Kelly Armstrong? Back in the 90s, she wrote a series of books, which I really loved,
And then I've tried to... sign there from Becky, when you mentioned that.
She wrote Werewolves really good as well. So I've always been interested in urban fantasy. So when Liminal came out, I just thought, that's right up my street. I've run a few games for the Monday Club, which Dave's involved, and I play on a Sunday morning in another Liminal game that Dave Farnworth runs for us. So we've got a trilogy going on. We're just about to embark on the last one, but hopefully he'll continue to run that over the next few months. So, yeah.
So it's fair to say you're all in, is that what we're saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, 100%. Sounds good. You know, we've done a previous episode of the podcast on Liminal, where it was described as ethereal beauty with hoodies, which I think is a great way of summing it up. So, I mean, obviously, we talked about Jonathan's experience with Liminal, and we'll come to Becky and Paul, because they are the stars of this podcast, in a second. But Dave, tell us a little bit about, you know, your experience of Liminal, because obviously you were playing in Jonathan's game and you played in mine, and I think you've run quite a bit yourself as well.
I have, yeah. I seem to have only done it for sort of for cons, though. We did a couple of one-off sessions, I think, didn't we, on Monday?
Yeah, we did. And which I played a werewolf on that.
Yeah. It just all comes back round, doesn't it? So my sort of thing was really Liminal sort of again coincided with coming back into role-playing games as well. And exactly as Jonathan said, was right up my street. And I developed a scenario for Tenby in Wales, where some of the actual real life characters ended up as various sorts of animals. And I won't give it away, because clearly it will be the bestseller for Drive Through RPG next year. So I can't give it the plot.
Well, of course.
Where I tried to sort of use the setting that I knew and overlaid the sort of horror with it. And I think when it was Kay, I think, who came up with the ethereal beauty with hoodies.
Yeah, it was Kay.
And it sort of fitted really well, because I found the system was brilliant, very slick, very easy to get. I mean, literally within minutes, you can sort of get up and running with it. The second thing is, you don't have to explain anything to anybody. It's got vampires, it's got werewolves, it's got fae, you know, and you're away. And also, it's in the modern day. And the great thing is, and particularly with the campaign that you ran for us, Steve, you could use the laptop that you were on online to sort of go down these rabbit holes of, you know, looking up ancient stone circles. And, oh, my God, hang on a second. That one needs to be done. We did the similarly then, transferred over to Jonathan's game. We did the same again. And it's just, I don't know, you bring so much into it. And there's so many seeds then that get sown, you know, in the GM's head. I just loved it. I thought it was a great game. I love PAX Londinium as well,
which
is obviously the first sort of supplement for it, which I thought was fantastic. The thing I really like about it is, number one, you don't feel patronised when you're reading the rule set, and very recently come across a few games that do that. And then the
13th
the second,
page not being mentioned clearly.
I'm saying nothing.
I'll edit that out, don't worry.
keep it in. And the other thing is, what you do is it's one of these games where I think you sort of drop a pebble into the mill pond, and then these ripples just go out. And, you know, with a very, very basic, very, very sort of simple seed. And it could be something as easy as, you know, P division have a meeting one night and something happens. That's it, you're away. I like that element of it. And I had written one for Grogmeat, which was going to be all about the Somerset Levellers. It was Somerset Levels, but, you know, Somerset Levellers involving Jacob Rees-Mogg. And something horrific happening to him in the opening scene.
If anyone's a real life vampire, it's probably definitely.
So it's wish fulfillment too.
There's an element of catharsis there, isn't there?
Definitely. So, Becky and Paul, I mean, what are your sort of feelings about Liminal's reception since it's been released? Because it's been out for a little while now. I mean, what sort of feedback are you getting? What are your thoughts about that?
It's been overwhelmingly positive. I mean, I've been blown away. At one stage, it's a case of I'm frequently getting fan mail. You know, someone I don't know on Twitter saying, oh, this is great. I really like it. Well, thank you very much.
I will stop sending it eventually, Paul.
It's only 90% of it that's from Dave. Yeah. And again, just hearing about other groups and things like that who are nothing to do with me, suddenly, hey, we're playing this great game. What more can you actually want as a designer than that to happen? Yeah, that is living the dream.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Paul, is that as a designer, the one thing you want is your games to be played. And I think that the kind of the proof of the pudding of the reception of Liminal is that it is a game which gets a lot of play. I think there's games out there which seem very good on paper and people get very excited about them, but you never seem to hear of them actually being played all that often. But the cool thing about Liminal is that I'm like you, Paul, I hear about games going on all the time.
One thing I'm curious about, do you get that from abroad as well, like America and other English speaking countries?
There's a surprisingly strong international audience.
Yeah.
So there certainly are Americans playing it, sometimes sticking it with it in Britain, sometimes moving it to America. Mm. But there's also surprising things. So, for example, it's popular in Spain. I mean, there was a Spanish translation. There's apparently a Japanese language Discord with hundreds of members.
Oh, fantastic.
Liminal as well. So it's
really enthusiastic about it. Because Call of Cthulhu is the best-selling game in Japan, apparently. There was a huge community.
I think it's setting into that sort of investigative in this horror and not sort of combat-focused thing, and therefore it appeals.
It's really interesting, but the flavour of the game is heart and soul is in the British Isles, and that sort of comes through in the writing, obviously, in Pax Londinium. And also, we'll obviously talk about Wolves of Britain as well, because I think that absolutely comes through.
Definitely,
But the important question for Becky, first of all, so werewolves, what is it about them? Why? you've written a whole entire game, Bite Marks, which is just about werewolves, which I've been reading through, and it's a lot of flavour in that one.
It's a really good game. You should play Bite Marks.
Yeah. I was going to say, for Jonathan's benefit, that Bite Marks was inspired by Kelly Armstrong's werewolf books, and that she was kind enough to do a stretch goal for it, which is... one of the scenarios is hers, which is in the back of the book. So that was
brilliant.
That was really cool. What is it about werewolves, though? It's an excellent question. And for me, it's because this is going to sound strange, so stay with me.
You're in the right place for strange. So yeah. Crack on.
I think that for me, werewolves are incredibly hopeful creatures of the night. They're very hopeful monsters. And the reason that I say that is that I think that there's many people out there who grapple with something, whether it's depression or anxiety, something where you feel like your body is out of your control, that your chemistry, your brain chemistry or something like that is doing something which is significantly affecting your behavior and your life and that sort of thing. And for me, the werewolves, it's just an analogy for that. It's an analogy for people who are struggling for things, struggling for a control over their body and a control over their lives that they don't have. And so every time there's a werewolf story, which is about people successfully, not always, but mostly successfully managing that control, I think it's really kind of uplifting and it's a sort of a tale of hope, isn't it? I mean, obviously, they're incredibly powerful, sexy creatures. Let's not pretend that that's not true. But I think there's sort of an underlying message of hope. And I think for me, this really came through when I watched Teen Wolf, the TV series, which if you like werewolves, I heartily recommend. It's an excellent TV show. But there's a scene in the TV show where a human character has a panic attack. And it's so very clearly a mirroring of the werewolves unable to control their change, the human unable to control their panic attack. And I just feel there's a really very powerful analogy there, which speaks to me.
Again, just reflecting on what I've read of Bite Marks. I haven't played Bite Marks, but I've read it. And it just struck me it was much more about the interaction between the characters from a social perspective. Yeah, there's the big teeth, claws and stuff. And that's part of it. But it seems to be much more about that sort of social interaction. Is that something that you... in your playtest, in your view, is that what you're trying to bring to the fore in Werewolves of Britain?
I think Werewolves of Britain has a really strong social dynamic to it and a social element to it as well. I think that Liminal as a system is an investigative system, but when I wrote Werewolves of Britain, it was after I'd finished writing Bite Marks. It was quite soon after I finished writing Bite Marks.
Well, that's right, because there was a little tiny bit of cross-fertilisation, weren't there? Tiny bits. We spoke about that.
We did speak about that. We definitely did speak about it. But for me, it was really important to paint a very strong picture of the social dynamic. There is something utterly compelling about the idea of a werewolf pack, about the idea of people who you are really important and really meaningful and who you might have a really strong bond with, but whom there is a real tension in that bond as well. And in Werewolves of Britain, I worked really hard to draw out a lot of themes around the political tensions that might exist and overlay on top of the pack and the domination or the losing control as a werewolf and how those all interplay.
I like the fact that actually you did the other thing that sort of, again, I was saying before, lends itself to Liminal, is that you draw in legends and sort of folklore as well. So you're the Black Shook, who, having grown up in Suffolk, you know, I'm sort of fairly aware of the Black Dog of Bungay and stuff, and obviously Hound of the Baskervilles as well. It sounds a bit patronising to say it, and I don't mean to. It's very clever. It's good that, you know, those you can weave an entirely different sort of story in there, you know, juxtaposing it with being, you know, werewolves as opposed to just dogs, as it were. So, yeah, I really liked it. Really good.
I was just going to say, I like the kind of tragic kind of story of the werewolves as well, but you know, the history and the way they kind of split off from the kind of shape changes. They were kind of linked to the land more. They embraced that kind of beast side of their themselves kind of thing. But the tragedies that came along after the persecution, it really gets you kind of going for them. You know, you're on their side kind of thing. I really like that. You become sympathetic towards them, even though they're, you know, brutal killers kind of thing. I really enjoy. I really like that.
It was really important to me when I was researching it to bring in some sort of Saxon elements because I know Paul.
Yeah.
I know what you like. And so as I was researching it, and then I found out about this, the reason why we don't have wolves in England and the UK and Scotland.
Yeah, though, absolutely. And you could bring that, really resonated for me.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So for the listeners, Becky, do you want to give her just a brief history, a brief capsule history of the werewolves? And because they are very different to how they're represented in other games.
Yeah, they're very deliberately so. So when Paul contacted me about this brief, I was really excited, but I wanted to be really careful because I think that there are other depictions of werewolves in media which kind of lean quite heavily into a bit of a master race theme. And I wanted to avoid that. I just wanted to do something really different. And then, of course, I started researching the history of not werewolves in Britain, sadly, just wolves in Britain, which it's quite a tragic history. When you look at the traditions of wolves and the history of it, there's kind of a lot of kind of interesting things spattered around English history, which I tried to bring together. So firstly, you had the Wuffingers, I'm probably pronouncing it badly, who were a Saxon clan who arrived here. Am I pronouncing it wrong, Paul?
Okay. I don't know. I don't pronounce old English.
He is Saxon, clearly.
Saxon. So a Saxon tribe called the Wuffingers, which means the wolf people or something like that. And I just thought, well, there's a really good starting point here. And then you can get into the way that the wolves were essentially and deliberately wiped out in the 1400s. There was a king who put a bounty on wolf pelts and the woolpits in, I think in Suffolk, is actually called, is not about wool, it's not about sheep, it's the wolf pit. And it's where they put hundreds and thousands of corpses of wolves. And there was an edict laid down by the king to deliberately destroy their habitats, you know. And so there's an awful lot sort of which resonates today, I think, with ecocide and the way that humans have continually destroyed habitats. But it was really interesting, if not very sad, to look at how in the 1400s a king set out to make wolves extinct in this country, which is deliberately so as well. And I felt as well, it just seems, you know, that these sort of things were just stacking up a little bit too perfectly in writing a history of werewolves in Britain. And then finally, I feel that I got to Robin Hood, absolute cornerstone piece of culture in Britain. Paul, as you know, I am one of the world's biggest fans of the ITV Robin of Sherwood series. Yes,
so I remember sort of reading through the first draft and you're getting to the Wolf's Head and the Robin of Sherwood, well, the Robin Hood references. And I was just laughing with delight when I read that.
Huge fan of Robin of Sherwood. And of course, he was called the Wolf's Head. You know, how much more perfect could that be? And so to sort of mirror that, I thought it'd be really lovely if there was a tradition amongst werewolves in Liminal, which it continued through to this day, that these stories were really important to them and they had a really strong oral tradition. And if you could attach yourself to powerful stories about the wolves' history, then that would shape how people thought of you today. In the same way that like politicians will invoke the name of Churchill or whatever, you know, to sort of align themselves in people's minds. And I wanted to really draw that out for the wolves, but with this really strong history of touchstones like Black Shuck and the Wolf's Head, Robin Hood, and the Hound of the Baskervilles. And luckily, we are not short of big dog myths in this country.
Every village has a big dog myth, almost, it looks like. There's a ghost dog myth of some kind.
And it, I think it resonates kind of a particular time of British writing. And it reminds me of Led Zeppelin 4. And the track Black Dog on there and things like that. So,
but I think what's good about the Robin Hood thing is you turn it on its head, because I mean, you know, spoilers, but he's not a goodie in your depiction of it as well. But I think also it's interesting because I think obviously gamers of a certain age or even now are going to compare or have it in their mind about werewolf, you know, the sort of World of Darkness thing. But certainly in my reading of what you've put together, although there's an element for some of the werewolves, as there are with the population who are very much into the ecological thing, it's not their central reason for existence. So was that a sort of a deliberate thing?
I think that I wanted to approach the werewolves as though they were just anybody else. You know, humans, we don't have one thing that's central to who and what we are. We're really multifaceted. And I wanted to put in some nods to the ecology, which I did do, but I wanted to make them far more complicated and much more political, I think, and not just in a, all the clans are going to meet up and smash each other to pieces until they've got a winner, but much, much more subtle. And also to, you know, because the werewolf city, if the werewolves were to have a city, I suppose, I don't know if they do have a city or if they will by the end of it, but if there was going to be a werewolf city, it was going to be Sheffield. And that was really important to me as well, because, well, obviously Paul lives in Sheffield and I live 15 minutes down the road from Sheffield. But I think that Sheffield's got a really interesting history as a city, and it felt really appropriate to me to have rebel wolves, or wolves who, even if they were part of the establishment, still kind of wanted to think of themselves as rebel wolves, having Sheffield as their centre and their heart because of the history of the city. And, you know, I remember at a really young age being told stories about the People's Republic of Sheffield. Mm. And so I wanted to kind of subtly draw some of that out as well.
That's really interesting. And the links with sort of the Peak District and the, you know, a lot of Neolithic Bronze Age sites on there. So I think, yeah, it draws it all in.
Wolverhampton would have been too obvious.
That was in my game, Wolverhampton, obviously, because that's the neck of the woods I'm from. So, but yeah, and I brought all the Saxon stuff. Yeah, but in the game I ran, the wolves were very much of that, as you described, Becky, the sort of master race type thing. And they were very definitely the baddies in that instance. they were trying to bring the Fimble Winter back. So, much and that sort of stuff.
Can I just ask something about, where did the idea of the gang magic come from?
I wanted to make the wolves not just physical slathering beasts. And I've always liked the idea in werewolf mythology and media of there being some sort of special pack magic, whether it's something really simple like the alpha can call his or her pack to him or her at any time, no matter where they are, or something like that. And I think as well that, you know, reading the rules to Liminal and the way that sort of the Fae worked and the other magic and the way that worked, it felt really obvious to me that it would be really cool if the werewolves could do magic, but only pack magic. They can't go off and cast spells like mages, but because they come together as a pack, they can do things that mages can't do.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, isn't it? It's the union there. I mean, the other thing is, of course, I think there's a thing running through Liminal where we talk about the crew, it's family, it's a found family.
Yeah.
And that's there even more strongly with werewolves and the werewolf pack. And that's a really nice thing to bring to the forefront.
Yeah, it's a bit odd, isn't it? Because for some reason, I've never really thought about things like vampires as being, you know, a part of that. Although virtually every modern vampire film you see, it's always, there's gangs of vampires knocking around where you think, well, there'd definitely be a bit of, you know, sort of territoriality. But I think the thing I really liked about reading this part of the sort of the liminal verse, if that's a word, was that, you know, TM at the end of that.
Liminal verse. There we go.
But I thought it was good because it would have been very easy just to say, here's lots of examples of werewolves and this is where werewolves are found, as opposed to actually, this is how it all works, you know, how the pack works and how magic might work with them. And I think I really enjoyed reading it. It's good.
It makes playing werewolf and as a character really interesting, doesn't it? Because you've got your ties to your crew, but you've also got that strain to your pack as well that you're tied to. Because a lot of people, I think, we play a werewolf as he's left the pack, or she's left the pack and she's a lone wolf. But it'd be really interesting to play a werewolf who still is really, you know, linked, has those strong links back to their pack, and just seeing how that dynamic works. That'd be, you know, really interesting to play out, I think.
And it plays really well into just running an all werewolf game, doesn't it?
You've
got all those interactions. And I think that'd be, you've got a ready-made set of ties that those people hold together. What I like about gang magic as well is that it's not overly specified, so it talks about the sorts of things you could do, but it's very much a narrative device. I think I quite like that, because I think you could really get down a rabbit hole of making it too mechanical, and I think probably would lose some of the magic. Some of the magic from it. See what I did there?
I think probably there was a bit of an influence coming in from Bite Marks there again, because one of the things that I wanted to do in Bite Marks was make people feel like they were in a pack when they were playing it. And I think that if you leave a kind of give people an idea, a jumping off point for the flavour of the magic, but leave it to them to fill in the details. If you are playing a werewolf pack together, then it's just such a fruitful way to kind of bond as a group by deciding, what is our pack magic like? How does it manifest? How is it different from other people? And deciding that as a group of players can be really cool.
It's almost like the spirit of the gang is greater than the sum of its parts. It's almost like a totem, isn't it, really, for the pack? Interesting. Okay, so, I mean, we've talked quite a lot about the background, and I think we started to touch a little bit about the themes that have been in your games. Are there any other themes that you think you'd like to see or to hear about people exploring when they are playing their own werewolf games, either as a pack by themselves or with, you know, werewolves as members of existing crews?
I'd like to see the sort of grand political werewolf game. So, of course, there's the Jaeger family trying to sort of unite all the different gangs of werewolves. And what Becky did actually gave a very nuanced take on the Jaegers, who were sort of almost implicitly, although I didn't come out and say it, baddies in that. Mm. And there is a case in the main liminal book. And in Werewolves of Britain, you're coming out and you can see exactly where they're coming from and why they're doing what they're doing, and actually why it's potentially good for the werewolves. Mm. And that's brilliant. So I'd like to see sort of basically a werewolf gang getting swept up in this and seeing what's happening there and the overall arc there. And I think that idea of, I suppose, it's basically finding a werewolf identity, if that makes any sense, not just beyond the sort of, not just in the gang, but as a werewolf overall. And the thing is, that's sort of somehow that's something that's been, again, Becky brought this out, something that's been missing for werewolves. And now it's coming back. And I think that's really interesting.
I got a sort of sense of a bit of a almost werewolf populism coming out, because the idea was that actually there weren't a lot of myths, because a lot of them that continuity had been lost because of, you know, that they'd been hunted to extinction and are very much on the fringes. And so I got the sense the Jaegers are creating this new myth of what werewolves are, but that they're designing it for their own purposes. I mean, I'd still see them as baddies within that. I think that, you know, they probably would achieve something for, you know, werewolves, give them strength, but I think it's certainly a thing that would come around to bite them.
I think one of the things that I think is so cool about Liminal, and I think you'll see it coming out more and more as you get into the other supplements which are on the way, which I won't.
No, we can talk about those.
Please do.
But is that, Paul, you can talk about the specific supplements, but what I was going to say was, what I really love about it is that you read the original book and you think you know what a particular faction are like. And then you read the supplement and you get to see them completely through the mirror. And it's completely different. And Paul really encouraged us all to do that in the writing, because I remember when I first wrote the very first draft as the Werewolves of Britain. I got it in really quick before anybody else to try and like stamp this is what the werewolves are going to be like. And I was pretty rude about the Order of St. Bede in it. You seem to recall that one of the other writers came back and said, oh, right, is that what the Order are like then? And Paul very graciously, and I think rightly, said, everybody looks like an enemy from the right angle. Anybody could look like the bad guy from the right angle. So
if I actually, that's one of the things that really sparked my sort of imagination, was this idea of, talked about it just a little bit before, about, you know, how people's interpretations of werewolves have been different. But the bits I liked was going through the various factions and saying exactly what it is, the view from the werewolves. And it made me then think about the bit that you were talking about, Steve, which is, if you've got a party made up of lots of different people from these different factions, what does the interplay look like? So as you said, you know, with that, the Order of St. Bede, if they find you alone, run. How the heck are you going to play that within you know, within the context of a group? Have you got to be, you know, this, have you got to hide what you are, and only in sort of extremist does that come out, which could be quite good fun. And it made me then think about, what if you started a liminal campaign and you don't say what everybody's, you know, particular feats or fate mythology happens to be, and you gradually uncover that as you go through, which could be, I think it could be quite good, quite interesting.
Yeah, that would be an interesting game, wouldn't it?
Just five people have been brought together as investigators by P Division. They don't say who you are, what you are. Then gradually as you go through, you've got to try and maybe have that tension in the between the factions is the bit that then brings out, you know, if you're actually caught by somebody you've got, or you've got to some sort of interaction with another party that you somehow got to bring to heel, and all of a sudden you've got somebody from the Order of Bede and a werewolf. What the heck happens there? Who's suddenly the baddie?
Yeah. And of course, don't think P Division don't have a strong agenda. Of course they do.
I am available, of course, to write the P Division. So I don't, you know, anytime. Don't mind doing it.
Just up the road from me, that their headquarters, actually. So it's the
no. Their headquarters is down here. Where are
you'll find that's not true. Jonathan, what do you think? Any thoughts from you on that?
It was really interesting because the Order of St. Bede get a really bad press in this, don't they? They're kind of experimenting on werewolves, and I really picked up on that because I think in the campaign we played, we have two MIBs. And they're really nice guys, aren't they? Yeah, and it'd be really interesting to bring a werewolf into like the game and they have to react to that, like Dave said. That'd be a really interesting dynamic. But yeah, and I guess as each supplement comes out, you'll get an insight into each kind of faction. Kind of like if you brought a Fae supplement out, you'd learn how the Fae interact with P Division and the Order of St. Bede. And, you know, and each supplement would change your kind of your perception of each faction, I guess.
But like, I think, you know, in like even P Division or Order of St. Bede, for example, even within that, there's going to be sub-factions. So it could be guys, MIBs, that they would be absolutely horrified to hear about what this spin-off have been doing. And I think, although Order of St. Bede and werewolves, as they're depicted, are going to be at each other's throats. I can't stop doing that. but I think what you find is that, you know, in the game setup, their allegiances to the crew. Mm. So it's more about the expectations. It's not going to be player versus player. They are bound together as a crew. And it's more about how they then square those relationships with their other connections to either their higher-ups of the Order of St. Bede or their pack or whatever.
Yeah. You
know, and that's where the tension comes. It's not between the players. It's more of that sort of external. I think Liminal, it's interesting because it's specified enough that it gives you the shape, but it gives you an awful lot of space to be able to do lots of interesting stuff with. So
was there anything sort of mechanically you wanted to sort of bring in that either might change or sort of adapt the rules, particularly for werewolves, other than we talked about the pack magic?
The pack magic was the only one that I brought in, I think. I mean, there's a little bit of the werewolves base stats are a little bit higher in some regards than some of the others, but I generally, you know what, I thought the system was pretty good. So there you go, Paul. Pretty good.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'll take it.
Take that faint praise and run with it, Paul.
Oh no, come on! We're all British here. We know that pretty good actually means amazing.
It's as strong a compliment as it gets. Come on.
Exactly.
It was okay.
Tolerable. I think that it was. I like the system as it was. I like a clean system generally, without too many widgets and flibbles. I like a system which kind of really focuses you down on what the play experience should be. So I didn't want to bring in loads of extra flanges and things like that, except for the gang magic, which I think I talked to you about before. I wrote I said, can I do this, Paul, please? Because it felt like a really important dimension to give the werewolves.
Yeah, and it's like keeping it narrative in the way it is, that really works.
All right, so Dave, Jonathan, any thoughts about how you'd like to bring werewolves into your game, you know, either as players or as GMs? Because I say, Jonathan, you just finished running one game, haven't you? And you're in the middle of playing another one? Or?
Yeah. I'd just go back to what I said before. It'd be interesting to bring a player character werewolf in to the crew and see how that plays out with their links back to the pack, with the kind of detail that has been put into the supplement. And, you know, you could fully explore that relationship. I wouldn't want them to become like the cavalry, you know, let's just call the werewolf pack in to save the day kind of thing. But it'd just be the tensions, I guess. And if you've got people from the Order of St. Bede in there as well, just to explore how that plays out. But I think, more than anything, I'd like to now, having read the supplement, to play a werewolf and to have another go, because I think we played in Dave's one shot and I played a werewolf there, but I'd really like to kind of, you know, with that extra information and all those ideas and that detail that's been put into a supplement, to kind of, you know, you could really explore that role a lot better.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, I think the bits that have sort of elevated the werewolf into a sort of a different, well, for me anyway, a different way of thinking about it, I think is the pack dynamic, I think is one thing. Jonathan said. I think the other thing is, as you kind of touched on, there's quite a lot of sort of melancholia about being a werewolf. And I'm wondering again how you could bring that out. So as Jonathan was saying, how could you sort of bring that to the fore? And I think it's quite nice that you know, that relationship with the other factions is the bit that would probably take center stage. It'd be quite an interesting way to get somebody to read the Werewolves of Britain supplement and then say, okay, so now how would you play a werewolf, and how would you alter it so that you've got to bounce off the other? You've maybe got to be a bit more secretive. You perhaps do have to do a little bit that's, you know, you've got to come to terms with being a loner, but in a different pack or something, which could be quite good fun, I think.
But again, I think it's, you know, you can't ignore the fact that they are really hard werewolves. Yeah. And I was just looking at...
Is that another one of these sort of euphemisms? Is it? You know, they're pretty good.
They're not bad in a fight. But they're really hard. The Dogs of War, which essentially is like their elite or an elite special operations type unit. And so you, Jonathan, saying about, you know, not calling the cavalry, but you could quite an interesting story about negotiating with Major Chanda Patel, sort of heads up the Dogs of War, about, and if you've got a particularly hard nut to crack, but I'm sure obviously it would cost, and what that cost would be. So I think there's, you know, there is room for more of a straightforward smash them up start of things in there as well.
Saying they're strong enough to do that, they're possibly pound for pound, they're probably the strongest individuals in the game.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I think when we played that Day's One Shot, I kind of changed into my wolf form and nobody could touch me. I was just ripping through opponents left, right, and centre. So that was really good. It's very enjoyable.
Yeah. That's always fun to do in a game sometimes, isn't it?
So, yeah.
So obviously we sort of talked about the supplement itself, and so we've been lucky enough to have sight of a pre-release version. I take it there's still work to do. I mean, the artwork is as you'd expect from Liminal Supplement. It's going to look amazing. Jason Benke has done fantastic work in there as well.
You're going to literally drool.
Yeah, there's been more since what I've said to you. So that's,
yeah, I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. Yeah,
I'm unfortunately, I've always been a bit gushy about Mr. Benke. I could never meet him. It'd be pathetic. It really would be. But genuinely, I think, you know, again, the artwork in everything so far has been one of the huge standouts, but I think in this, I think it's absolutely almost breathtaking at times. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
I mean, what gets me with Jason is he gets better and better, and that's coming from a very high standard in the first place.
Nauseating, really, isn't it? You're gonna be sort of talented.
I mean, the other thing is he gets it. He gets the subtlety and when to be blatant, when to be subtle, the combination of elements. And actually also the diversity in characters and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So when you really, you know, because it could be a bit like the only analogy I could possibly think of is when I drove once up is it Highway 101 in California? You go up the western seaboard and you sort of drive around one promontory and, oh my God, it's breathtaking. Oh, this is fantastic. You go around the next one, it's breathtaking. Oh my God. You go around the third one, it's like, oh God. Okay, yes, it's very pretty away you go. But he mixes it up in this so that actually on each, you know, that it draws your eye and sparks something else off each time. Mm. It's, I think he's done a brilliant, brilliant job.
I think the aesthetic's really strong. So, I mean, whenever I sort of, you know, you think about art in books, I always think back to, in my opinion, the Dark Sun stuff with Brom in sort of ADD second edition, you know, God, 30 years ago, whatever it was. But that was a really strong aesthetic and it sort of really tied it all together. And I think, okay, we've got the liminal book and then we've got Pax Londinium and we've got, you know, this supplement and others coming through. There's a really strong aesthetic that ties it together. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's almost, oh, I'm not an artist. If Kay was here, she'd have a much better way of saying this. But it's that overlaying that the fantastic on the real. You've got sort of background shots of streets and then there's like black shook in the middle of it. Yeah. And it all sort of gels really, which is amazing. Okay, so from a words perspective, Becky, is it done from your perspective now? Is there more to do on it or no?
So it is completely done. How long ago did I give you the first draft, Paul?
I think it was summer of 2019.
I think it was summer of 2019 when I did my last writing on it.
Oh, wow.
Back in the world that was.
So it's interesting. So, of course, there's several drafts of things that are finished. Yeah, so there's the Fairies and Folklore supplement, which I've written. The other interesting one coming out is Neil's Novocastria.
Can't wait for Novocastria.
Which is firstly interesting because you've got actually focus on Newcastle.
Yeah.
And sort of that's like that area, the Tyneside area. There's material on the Order of St. Bede, which will be interesting to see. And then also there's this whole overlaid ghost realm there.
And of course, now it's another accent I've got to try and perfect. It will still sound like Mexicans, but
when
I'll
give
it a go.
Perfect, I was going to say, what do you actually mean by perfect?
The many Mexican citizens of Newcastle.
There's thousands of them, and they're all over the Order of St. Bede as well.
This is probably terrible.
Santa
so
Bede obviously is for them.
One of the real joys for me, actually, of Liminal, I mean, we have Pax Londinium out there already, but with what's coming down the line, one of the real joys for me is being able to explore other British cities, northern cities that don't always get a lot of airtime in supplements. Mm. Everything often tends to get concentrated around London or maybe Cornwall with, you know, all of the...
When's the Birmingham supplement coming out?
Well, yeah, when's the Birmingham, the Glasgow?
Well, that's a lot of stuff written is, of course, there's something called the Liminal Kingdom, where it sort of takes from basically, hey, here's a place, let's write about that. And also in more detail than there is in the Liminal Core book. And that's taking a great diversity of places as well to write about. So, for example, there's more about Sheffield and the werewolves there, or the werewolves in Sheffield. There's more about various places, and yes, that includes Birmingham. Yeah, there's more to it than Queen Elizabeth Hospital, which I think is the only mention.
Yeah, I used to work there. Yeah. I didn't see any of that going on when I was there, but I used to work there.
You failed your role.
I did. And yeah, I didn't investigate it properly.
That's why Steve's with us today.
Exactly. I didn't see it. Yeah. Okay, so down to brass tacks then. So come on, when do we think Werewolves of Britain is going to be ready and out, available?
I'm going to say this year.
Good enough. I won't push you any more than that. Okay. So we've got Werewolves of Britain coming. You've already sort of teased us with lots of other stuff that might be coming down the line. So I'm not going to ask for dates for the others. So you talked about Novocastria, which is obviously the Newcastle book. There's Fey Realm, one you've talked about as well. Yeah. What else have we got coming down the line?
So they're both fully written. We're talking about, let's see, there's the Liminal Kingdom, which is, you know, this big gazetteer going into details, local legends, local things. That's mostly written. There will be a book, a compilation of the adventures with all new art. Mm. So I was bringing out these sort of £1 or £2 individual adventures for Liminal throughout. Then there's sort of things that are still in idea form. So I've suddenly had this idea that's got in my head of the Liminal Grail Quest.
I was going to say that every great RPG has to have a grand campaign to go with it.
But the idea is, you know, the country is sick. Look around you. You can see the problems. You can see that. It needs healing.
I'm in for that. That sounds great. Yeah. I love that.
See, I've already got
a podcast near you.
I've already started that with the Jacob Rees-Mogg story. It needs to be healed. Okay. The only thing I would, I'd make a pitch clearly for East Anglia. You know, and the clue is in the town name. Ipswich, Norwich. See, it's all there if you look closely enough.
I think I've got sadly more about Norwich than Ipswich.
The shock.
Yeah.
You've got to do something with the Norfolk Broads, though. I blew my mind when I heard they were man-made.
Yeah,
like somebody dug the Norfolk Broads. Wow. Yeah,
the whole idea of, I suppose, landscape history is something that really needs to feature, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So the whole thing about ritual landscapes. What if someone, when they built the Norfolk Broads, they built the ditches and dikes so it formed some sort of pattern to hold back the sea? It's not just the sea they're holding back. Maybe they're holding back other things.
No.
There you go.
But right. They lost Dunwich. Was Dunwich one of the capitals of England at one stage, is slid into the sea. Yeah. Are they connected?
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, look at the supplement itself. Even its unfinished form, it's fantastic. I think there's lots of good gaming meat in there to sink your teeth into. I think it'll certainly, not that it needs reinvigorating, but it'll certainly send people's minds in different directions, I think, with Liminal Concern, because it does do different things.
I was a bit surprised, actually, that this was after the Pax Londinium, that this was the first one that came out. But as Becky said, you know, apart from the fact that she's extremely quick on the draw, but it was good. It really made me think a lot about then. It starts making you think about, actually, okay, so what about the other orders? What about the other factions that are there? And I think it's really, really well written and extremely enjoyable read. So thank you very much.
No, I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. It wasn't what I'd expected it to be, and I'm so glad that it focuses on the savagery and the animal, the beast side of the werewolves. So they're not like vanilla, like puppy dogs or, you know, werewolves kind of thing. They're the brutes and that's what I really liked about it.
But Steve, I really appreciate you doing this. It's really nice.
No, it's my pleasure. It's great.
Yeah,
to talk
thanks
about
for inviting me.
No, thanks very much for coming on. We're a bunch of idiots, really. We're just pleased people will talk to. Well, I am. I'm just pleased people talk to me. So there you go. That's it. All done. Thanks very much, guys. Thanks very much for taking part. And talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to another exploration of my gaming vexes. If you've got any thoughts you'd like to add to what you've heard here, or a gaming vex of your own you'd like to offer up for discussion, you can contact me on Twitter at AllAnthar, or you can leave a voice message. The link's on the podcast webpage on Anchor, or can be found in the show notes. Until the next time, may all your games be free of vexatiousness, and be excellent to each other, always.